Good morning. Continuing on in our journey, the biblical idea of pursuing happiness, and this is the fourth lesson. Excited about next week. This is a side note now, but Scott Souza will be doing our morning lesson, and Andy will be doing an evening lesson next week, tonight, treated by Mike Franklin. So, fourth lesson today on happiness. We'll pursue one more angle that we haven't touched on yet in 2 weeks. So I hope you'll join us in that. So today, in the biblical pursuit of happiness, just let me get settled here. I always forget to do that right when I walk up. Today we're going to look at how to produce happiness. You know, there is a thought that pervades Christianity, and I had it for decades. And I've said it before, I'll say it again, that joy is eternal and can't be taken from us, and that's true. Rejoice in the Lord always, Philippians 4:4. Rejoice in the Lord always, and again I would say rejoice, good times, bad times, troubled times, always. And so joy can't be taken away, but there's also the most common idea that happiness is just circumstantial. Something good happens. Oh, there's a $20 bill. I'm happy. But that's a small fraction of happiness. And I think we saw that last week, but we're going to continue to look at it. That happiness and joy are very much united. They're not identical, but very much united. And happiness is under our control. Most of the time, it's not circumstantial, although there are losses and experiences that will cause us true grief. And we may not be able to say at that moment that we have happiness. For the most part, it's under our control, and we can manufacture it with God's help. He tells us we can. So we're going to look at that today. One day, a woman walked up and greeted a little old man that was rocking in a chair on his porch. She said, "I couldn't help notice how happy you look. What's your secret to long life?" The man said, "I smoke 3 packs of cigarettes a day. I also drink a case of whiskey a week, eat fatty foods, and never exercise." She goes, "That's amazing. How old are you?" 26. I can guarantee you, anybody with that lifestyle is not happy. They may get momentary pleasure out of those small things, but they are not happy. That destroys relationships and everything else. So not to belabor that point, but there you go. 26. All right. So we've been looking at keys to authentic happiness, authentic happiness. And one we looked at about 3 weeks ago was holiness creates happiness. God said in 1 Peter and in the Old Testament as well, 1 Peter 1:16, "Be holy, for I'm holy." And we mentioned that that's the only term in the entire Bible that's used 3 times in succession to describe God. Holy, holy, holy. And he says, he's holy. We were designed, created, and intended to be devoted to him, devoted to his service. We're designed to be holy. And when something functions well, you name any device you have or any person you have, when they function properly, that brings about satisfaction and joy and happiness. And when we are functioning well, we're being holy, happiness is a natural byproduct. It's going to happen because it's on purpose. We go, "Lord, I am yours. I wouldn't want to do anything else but be your servant in any way that I can be." That brings about happiness. That was our first lesson. A second one, so here's a follow-up verse to that. John 15:10. Jesus speaking says, "If you keep my commandments, you will abide in my love." Nothing better than that. just as I have kept my Father's commandments and abide in His love. These things I have spoken to you, so that my joy may be in you and that your joy may be complete. Keeping His commandments is being holy, and it makes our joy complete, full, nothing lacking, the best. So that's holiness brings about happiness. The next idea that we looked at is that our conscience protects and guides us. The conscience is as a gift from God, I don't know if it's inner voice, inner thoughts, how it works. It may be different for different people, but through the conscience guides us and protects us. It says, keep on. You're on the right path. I'm testifying, as Paul used the term, his conscience testified. I'm conscious saying, I'm testifying, you're doing well. Or the conscience saying, no. Bad choice. Don't do it. Pull up. It's our guide and protector. And when we disobey our conscience, well, let's look at 1 Timothy 1:19. Paul is speaking to Timothy, keeping the faith and a good conscience, which some have rejected and suffered shipwreck in regard to the faith. When we neglect our conscience, when we shipwreck our faith and our conscience, we're not doing the very thing that God created us to do. And there's no way a person can have authentic happiness or deep joy in that kind of a situation. So the conscience helps us stay on the right track. It increases our happiness by guiding us well, if we protect it, as we train it, as we spoke of before. So we haven't discussed this yet, but today we're going to look at two main points. Scientists are saying that there's great practical value in happiness. Tremendous. And if you read the research, I'll touch on it, but if you read the research, and it's easy, I can let you know where it's at. It surprised them. The research is that the social scientists weren't expecting to find what they found. So we're going to look at that, and I'll tell you why. Because you may say, well, who cares? You're right. They're not inspired. But I think it has a really neat tie-in. And then the last point we'll look at today is, how do you do it? Well, I've got some miserable days sometimes. How do I go about producing authentic happiness? So we'll look at that in brief, but enough that you'll have the tool. So let's talk about the scientists today, social scientists, psychologists, psychiatrists, those researchers at Stanford and Harvard and a couple other places. They are saying that the blessings, the benefits, maybe I should have put that, because they're not using the word blessings, believe me, I haven't seen that yet. I should have said the benefits of happiness is caught them off guard, unexpected, wonderful, powerful. Maybe one of the greatest influences in the life of people. So here, I don't know if you've heard of the nun study, but the study of nuns, some researchers way back in 1930, 32, wanted to know, how does happiness affect our lives? Is it a trivial thing? Is it worth pursuing? How does it affect our life? Does it have any impact at all? And so they said, how are we going to study people? Well, it's kind of hard, even if we choose people randomly. Some may live in Utah, which is a pretty healthy, clean state. People live longer in Utah than they do their neighbor, Nevada, where a lot of gambling, smoking, drinking, and this kind of thing, and more pollution in the big city of Las Vegas goes on. How are we going to narrow it down and get rid of as many variables as we can to make sure that if we come up with a conclusion, it has to do with happiness and not genetics or wealth and social standing, intelligence. So they said, nuns. We'll choose nuns that all live in the same house, so they're breathing the same air, drinking the same water, they're eating the same food, same religion, no children, no husbands. That probably increases their lifespan. No. But no husbands. They got rid of as many variables as they could. And they started, and all these nuns were between 18 and 22, all about the same age. And they made them write when they got accepted to the nunnery, or whatever, I can't remember what they call it, the mother house. When they got accepted, they had to write a short biography. And so they did, and they took these biographies, and they said, wow. And I had them on here, and I said, less than too long anyway, but I had, you can get copies of a couple of the letters, and one is overflowing with joy and eagerness, and I can't wait. And another one says, I was the oldest of seven children, five sisters and two brothers, and I am joined this, and I'm going to serve God to promote religion and to my satisfaction. And that's not a quote, but that's pretty close. I said, well, the first one's a lot happier than the second. So they took the 180 nuns, divided them into groups of 45 exactly. So we're just going to watch them. And for a long time, it was the longest study on adult behavior ever, anywhere. It went on for over 70 years, 75 or something like that. Just ended around 2012. Okay? So here's what they discovered as they watched these nuns closely. And the nuns, by the way, many of them agreed, which surprised me, but many of them agreed to donate their brain to science so that when they died, scientists could look at it and say, hey, any Alzheimer's going on here? And what's the health of the brain? Or like that Daniel Amen or whatever his name is, he studies brains. So many of the nuns agreed to do that as well. So tremendous amount of wealth of information. So here's the happiest group. And then there's they have four quadrants, but they took the very happiest group. They took them all, but we're only going to look at the happiest group versus the least happy group. And look at the amazing outcome. 90% of the nuns in the happiest group were still alive at age 84. That's over the national average. 90%, 41 nuns in that group still alive. Unhappiest group, only a third still alive, only 15. About 2.5 times more, 250%, if you like percentages, more the happy nuns than the unhappy nuns, just on how long they lived. Then, by age 94, over half of the happy group still alive at 94. One exceeded 100, but the study didn't tell me by how much. But 54%, 24 of them still alive at age 94. And in the unhappy group, 11%, 5. 24 to 5, almost a 500% difference, five times. Incredible to me and to them, to the researchers. Not only that, but the people, the women in the happy group, far healthier. In the unhappy group, more Alzheimer's and you name it, heart disease and all of it. Just far healthier in the group that was happy. Their happiness God intended for all of us to have it. Their happiness affected their physical life dramatically in length and in quality. And no surprise, right? We're not surprised, but these researchers who, to me, it looks like they're not believers, or most of them, they say, we have Ecclesiastes 3:22. I have seen nothing is better than that man should be happy in his activities, for that is his lot. That's God's desire for every one of us to be happy. All people to be happy, but you can't really be happy unless you're God's, unless you're holy, but that's his goal. Nothing better than that man should be happy in his activities. In Proverbs 3:13, how blessed is the person, who finds wisdom and gains understanding. This is from our reading. Right there, how blessed. We've talked about it before. In the New Testament, this means, the word blessed means happy, makarios. This is Hebrew, I know that. But In the New Testament, it means happy along with God's approval. Yes, good for you. I'm proud of you. We're happy. He's happy. Well, this same word is translated identically in the English in the New Testament. We looked last week at Psalms 32, where David said, how blessed is the man whose sins are forgiven. And word for word in Romans 4, how blessed is the man, which means happy with God's approval in the book of Romans. So this is happiness along with gaining God's favor. And this is how blessed is the man who finds wisdom, how happy and pleasing to God. Then dropping down to verse 16, long life is in her right hand. Whose right hand? Wisdom's right hand. Blessed is the man who finds wisdom. It's personified as a woman. So long life is in the hand of wisdom, which means those who have it live longer. Just like the nun study showed, people who are blessed, people who are happy with God, they live longer. Now, the nuns, I'm not implying for a second that they've obeyed the full plan of salvation. I don't know their soul status. But some principles in life, and the Bible apply to all people. For instance, Matthew 26, 52, I think it is, where you know, Peter whips out the sword and cuts off Malchus's ear, the slave of the high priest, and Jesus says, all who live by the sword perish by the sword. It's a universal truth. Galatians, whatever man sows, that he'll reap. There are just some universal truths, and happiness is one of these, where it has a positive effect. And I won't go into the science behind it, but we even know a lot of the science, like hormone production, and this good hormone production versus bad hormone production. Anyway, long life is in her right hand, so you live longer when you're blessed. She is a tree of life, verse 18, to those who take hold of her, and happy are all who hold her fast. So we know that happiness extends life, brings better health. It affects just about every aspect of life. Another study. And again, I'll tell you why I'm looking at this in just a minute. But first, we're looking at scientists who are not inspired. We acknowledge that. There's a Harvard study. Now is the longest running adult development study. The nun study went maybe 75 years, which is unheard of because you have to get the funding for it. And then if it goes that long, the directors of it, they die. And somebody else has to take over the study. And that's exactly what happened in both of these. But now the Harvard study of adult development began in 1938, still ongoing today. What's that, 94 years later? And here's what they did. In Harvard, which was an all-male school at the time, that'll explain why you see the difference in why it was all-male. There were they took a study of 724 male youths in two groups. One group was exclusively sophomores from the university or the Harvard University, exclusively. So what do you know about them? Intelligent or you don't get in. Wealthy or you don't get in. Unless you're some kind of stud and you get on a scholarship, still you're smart. So they took half the group was from Harvard sophomores. The other group was the same age from the Boston slums. Many of them so poor, this is before World War II, just after the Depression, were so poor they didn't have running water in their home. And they lived in a city. Pretty bad. They were really poor in all kinds of alcoholism, just you'd say disadvantaged compared to the young men that were students at Harvard, high IQ and lots of money and that kind of thing. And so they did this study. It's still ongoing. Only a handful are alive. The last stats I got were from September last month. Most are not around anymore. But the most important factor they discovered in happiness and physical health, what was it? Well, they guessed first. Scientists want to do that. I hypothesized that genetics are going to be the biggest determinant. His mom lived long, her mom lived long, and genetics or IQ, make better choices, or wealth, can afford better medicine. Lots of factors. What was another one? Genetics, wealth, social class, or IQ. But it wasn't any of those. None of those led to those that were successful. Those things we just mentioned didn't play a part. What did was close ties with family, friends, and community. And of course, they don't say church because these guys aren't Christians. It's the majority again. But who knows how many of the ones that did well were members of the church. But family, friends, community that brought about happiness. They were close ties to what brought about happiness. That's what led to the successful lives and the happy lives. There was even a president. John F. Kennedy was one of the study people in the Harvard group, not the slum group, as you might guess. Here's what they found. They studied these guys closely. They sent them questionnaires. They went to the living rooms. They got in their house to see the living conditions. They took blood samples, everything. They closely monitored these men, these 724 men. And they found that those who were the most satisfied at age 50, I'm just a fortunate guy, man. Life is good. Everybody has a problem, but life is good, and I'm glad to be alive. Those that were most satisfied at 50, they were the healthiest at age 80. Nothing to do with wealth, social status, fame, IQ, any of that stuff. Had to do with close human relationships. And they weren't all, I mean, perhaps some were Christians, we're not told. So what does this have to do with the Bible and God's kingdom? I've given you two science projects, and who cares, right? Well, I do, because here's what's really cool in my mind is these studies confirm biblical truths. They confirm what the Bible has said. Now, positive psychology, that's what this stuff is. There's social scientists, some of them are starting to look at what's right with human beings, what works, rather than what's wrong with human beings. That didn't start till the early 1990s, about 30 years ago. But all the stuff they're finding out, the Bible talks about 3,000 years ago. 3,000 years ago, we had all this information. We read a little bit of it this morning, some of it last week. They're surprised? We're not, because we've known it. We've had it in our Bibles. So they studied, confirmed biblical principles. Happiness is a positive and major influence because it's designed by God, given by God for us to enjoy. He wants that. And they're finding that out now, and to some surprise in some of their cases, actually. The next thing is this, that happiness, and we'll look at it, can be improved. What Christian doesn't struggle at times? What Christian doesn't have a downtime in their life? Certainly some of us today, I would imagine. And so happiness can be, I should have put improved and created, but can be improved wherever you are right now. And it can be created, manufactured, synthesized is the word that the fancy pants scientists use. We can synthesize happiness. Now you know a fancy word. Okay, this is new science, 30 years, old information. We've had it, we've read from the book of Psalms written over 3,000 years ago, Proverbs about 3,000 years ago. Even the book of Deuteronomy deals with this 3,500 years ago. We've known it. I say hallelujah. I'm glad they're discovering it. It just confirms the beauty, the power of the Bible, and that Christianity works. Amen. Christianity works. Tangible, benefited everybody in the world wants to enjoy. So I say, great, keep up the research. When it disagrees, it's going to be wrong. But I love it when science confirms what we've known forever. They go, yeah. Okay, so wanted to go along with living longer and being happy with close social ties. A joyful heart, Proverbs 17:22. A joyful heart is good medicine. Literally, from what I read, and I don't read Hebrew, but I can read about Hebrew, it means a joyful heart is good healing, is what two people said that I read. Good healing. But a broken spirit dries up the bones. You know that's true. When we're happy, we produce good endorphins. And I can't remember all the names right now. I'm on the spot. But we make dopamine and oxytocin. And when we are not happy, we also make bad, harmful hormones that attack the circulatory system and harm us and shorten our lives. And in some studies, they say that unhappiness shortens our life like smoking two packs of cigarette a day or 8 to 10 years. It's significant. And by the way, just this is free, but did you know that you even make oxytocin? He talked about close ties and this kind of thing. Scientists now know that if you shake someone's hand, you have physical, you remember the mask, or, you know, if you shake someone's hand, your body produces a little bit of oxytocin. If you hug somebody, more oxytocin. A joyful heart is good medicine, but a broken spirit, unhappy spirit, dries up the bone, destructive, harmful to our lives. Companionship. Again, they're just confirming what the Bible has said. Genesis 2:18, then the Lord God said, it is not good for man to be alone. I will make him a helper suitable for him. So if something's not good, another way to say it is, it's harmful. It's harmful for us to live isolated lives, and that's probably one of many purposes for God's kingdom that we call the church, is for association and support and edification and companionship. Not good for man to be alone. The Bible has said that for a long time. And companionship helps heal the body and refreshes our bones. So, last point. Few slides, but the last main point is that meaningful happiness can be improved. So let's say that you're going through that season again that's very unpleasant, you're unhappy. You can change that. That is absolutely that's under our control. Improving where our happiness level is. We can even make it when we don't have it. So, simple fact. Not all Christians know what I'm sharing with you today. Not all Christians know that they can increase their level of happiness. How do I know? I'm no social scientist. Because I was one. We're learning things today I didn't know for a decade or two, maybe longer as a Christian. And I've talked to other Christians. And again, back to that thinking that, oh, happiness is circumstantial. I can't control it at all. It controls me. And joy is the only thing that I can. And there's this pervasive idea. I think it's really diminishing in the church. I hope it is. And among just believers in general, that life here on earth is terrible. You know, just grunt your way through it, grit your teeth. And look, yeah, man, there's pain. We've talked about that. There's suffering. Yeah, we've talked about that. It's not terrible. It's meant, as we looked in previous verses, life is meant to be enjoyed. And when we express happiness, we glorify God because we're achieving the purpose that we want. And I'd like to just, we studied Psalms 32 last week, but just one quick verse in Psalm 32. It's maybe two. In verse 10, many are the sorrows of the wicked, but he who trusts in the Lord, loving kindness shall surround him. Now the punchline, be glad in the Lord and rejoice, you righteous ones, and shout for joy, all you who are upright in heart. We're talking about a physical expression, a physical expression. Rejoice and shout for joy, to be expressed outwardly, not just an inward thing, but an outward expression. Thank you, Lord. You've blessed me greatly. And you read, and we read last week in Psalms 51, after David sinned with Bathsheba, he said, in fact, I could probably pop it open here, Psalms 51, 12, David making a request and then making a promise. Restore to me the joy of your salvation and sustain me with a willing spirit. Then I, David, will teach transgressors your way and sinners will be converted to you. Yeah. If we understand the depths of what we was talked about today on the Lord's Supper and what God did, an incredible thing to save us. How can we hold back? And David says, I will teach transgressors your ways and sinners will be converted to you. That's just a natural expression of happiness in the Lord, if we have it. Not all Christians know that, and so they don't do much about it, but we can change that. So, question for you. Do you ever do a mental run-through of your day, like before you get out of bed, to say, maybe pray a little bit and say, okay, I'm going to do these two things. My goal is to accomplish these two things, and I want to avoid that meeting. I wonder if I can get out of it because it doesn't have any value, and I want to greet that person at work and cheer them up because they're suffering. And do you ever go through a mental planning in your day? Raise your hand if you ever do. Anybody do that? Because I do that now. Okay. And so you plan the various tasks you're going to tackle. Here's the question. And I don't know the answer. Some of you are ahead of me in this category for sure. But how often do you specifically plan for happiness? Specifically. I've got something I don't want to do today. But since it's unavoidable, and since I have to, you know what? I'm going to tackle it. I'm going to tackle it with zeal for God. With joy that I'm alive and have the ability to do it, even though I don't want to. How often you specifically plan for happiness? I'm going to hit the day with joy and happiness in my heart. I think that's key. Matthew 5, Jesus is teaching us that we can plan to put more happiness into our lives. So just take a quick look at Matthew 5. I just wrote down the first part of each verse here. But social scientists, they say we can improve our happiness, and they're right. They're right because Jesus tells us we can improve our level of happiness. And here's some of the places where he says that. He gives, I count 10 verses where he says, blessed are the poor in spirit. That means happy and approved by God. Verse 5, happy and approved by God. Happy, well, is that just a fact that we read and we do nothing about? Or is he saying that if we work on our gentleness, we'll enjoy more happiness, we'll be blessed? Let's say that, you know, there's someone at work that's causing a problem. Well, we're going to show them mercy because it says, blessed are the merciful in verse 7. We're going to go out of our way to show them mercy under our control. And this is a promise right here. Want to increase your happiness? Then we can work on these specific 10. There's more than that in the Bible, in the New Testament. But we can specifically say, what needs the most work in me? And decide to do that. Decide to be blessed as a peacemaker or hungering and thirsting for righteousness. All of those things, they bring happiness and God's approval. There's something we can do. I'm not going to go into depth. Too much to cover, but you know where these are, Matthew chapter 5, and you have the ability to pursue them as you pursue happiness in God. So can money buy happiness? Yes and no. You know, you would have asked me before I put the lesson together, I would have said, of course not, but that's not right. So let's look at that. So knows one answer. Lottery winners compared to permanently injured folks. They did a study, it may have been by CNN. I didn't write down the documentation for you, but I think it was CNN. You can look, it's easy to find on the internet. So they decided to study the happiness level, how it changes with people who win the lottery, a minimum of 50,000 up to the maximum of what, 1.3 billion or something like that. But what? How does that change their happiness? And they decided at the same time to study people who were paraplegic or quadriplegic. They've recently lost the use of two of the limbs to four of the limbs. How does that change their happiness level? And so do you know about this already? I mean, you don't have to raise your hand, but of those that win the lottery, the majority are less happy after they win the lottery than before they won it. The average people that win it spend it all in 5 years and go into debt. So now they have more pressure than they ever had before. And of course, they're humiliated because they're broke. But worse than that, they claim that it destroys relationships. Because once you win the lottery, it's not a secret. You sign something that says they can publish this information. Not only do all your friends and all your family find out about it, but the whole world knows about it. So all the time, you got people, I'm starving to death, and they got all these stories, and sometimes it separates friendships. You know, I don't think that's the best thing for you, Jerry. I don't think giving you more money is the best thing. And lots of conflict. And so at the end of, after a year, I don't know how, I forget how long it is. But anyway, they are less happy than before they won the lottery. The majority. Now, I know a lottery winner. My daughter worked for him. Happy guy. Because on the question of can money buy happiness, the answer was yes for him. And I'll explain that in a minute. But the majority are less happy. How about those that are paraplegic or quadriplegics? Well, after a year, their happiness is even with the lottery winners. And oftentimes, I guess more than half the time, their happiness level goes up to where it was before they were injured. Takes about a year to work it all through mentally, and then it goes back to where it was, because happiness is not circumstantial. It's decided up here. I thought that was pretty cool. So can money buy happiness? Well, one answer is no. 1 Timothy 6:9, but those who want to get rich fall into temptation and a snare in many foolish and harmful desires, which plunge men into ruin and destruction. Verse 10, for the love of money is the root of all sorts of evil. Notice, it's not money. Money is not the root of all sorts of evil. The love of it, putting it above God, truth, integrity, relationships. Not money, but the love of money is the root of all evil. And some, by longing for it, have wandered away from the faith and pierced themselves with many griefs. Many griefs. Again, the majority of lottery winners, I don't have the exact percentage, but it's the majority, are less happy, and they spend most of the money on themselves. That doesn't bring happiness. So the answer in that situation is no, it can't buy happiness. But can money buy happiness? Yes, it depends on how you spend it. If you spend it correctly, it can. It can buy. Dr. Michael Norton from Harvard, he did a money experiment, and he did it first in Canada, British Columbia, near here, and then he did it in Uganda and poor places. And what they did was they would go up to students at first in the British Columbia study and say, hey, would you like to be part of an experiment? And if they said yes, they would give them an envelope with money in it. Not a lot. This is 2011, so probably worth about twice as much as it is today. But the envelope would have $5 to $15 in the first experiment, $5 to $15. And they would say, if you're going to participate, here's your obligations. You have to spend it by 5 o'clock today and report back to us. And half of them, they said, spend it on others. wasn't even their money. But that was the deal. You got to spend this on others and have them spend on anything you want. Candy, latte, jewelry, whatever, sunglasses. And so they did. These students went out and they reported back. And guess what the findings were? The people that got the free money and spent it on themselves didn't affect their happiness level. Didn't go down, didn't go up, just didn't affect it. Nothing. But those that gave the money away, that spent it on somebody else, significant, even though it wasn't their money, significant increase in happiness. They enjoyed it. It meant a lot to them. So they said, but Canada is kind of like the United States, pretty affluent, and let's do it in a poor country. And so they flew to Uganda and did the same experiment. And you can this is on a TED Talk, Dr. Michael Norton. And so they went to Uganda. And they said the same thing, to have them spend it on yourself, spend it on others, same exact result. In fact, it had nothing to do with the amount of money. Of course, they weren't using large amounts, but it didn't matter if they were giving away $5, $15, or $20. I think it went up to $20. Didn't matter. Happiness was always the result of giving to others, spending it on others. And those that spent it on themselves didn't change, nothing. Life didn't get better, didn't get worse, just no change at all. And so they did that in several times over and over and over again. And can money buy happiness? Yeah. In this way it can. You spend it on other people, and whether or not it changes their happiness level, and it does sometimes, it affects ours. And that's exactly what Jesus said, right? In Acts chapter 20, verse 35. In everything, Paul speaking in the beginning, in everything, I showed you that by working hard in this manner, you must help the weak. And remember the words of the Lord Jesus, that he himself said, it is more blessed to give than to receive. So it brings more happiness when we share and give. And I like receiving. I mean, you really should do it as an experiment and give me things, you know. Jamoke almond fudge, cash, and just see. If I want to make sure the point is, Jesus said it, so it's true. Absolute truth. When we give, it increases our happiness level more than if we were to receive. Awesome, huh? So we bought this isn't it, but it was a better picture, so I bought a little, small little chainsaw, like under 2 weeks ago. I read all the directions, and they weren't bad. They had some errors you had to figure it out, but they weren't bad. And it said, okay, before you cut anything, tighten the chain. And to this certain degree, but not too much. And put oil in the automatic oiler, or if you don't have one of those, then you put oil on the chain itself. But put oil in the automatic oiler, and there were a couple other things. Guess what? If you don't do that, it's still going to work. It's still going to work for a few minutes till it burns up and is destroyed. But there's a way to get the most out of a chainsaw. That's exactly right when it comes to human beings, especially God's children. You want to make the most of your life, not burn up and get destroyed, but you want to enjoy that joy and the happiness and get the very most. Maximize your life. We've got an instruction manual. Jesus gave us several that we looked at already today. There's things we can do directly increase our happiness or to create it if we're almost out. We'll end with Proverbs 3:1. My son, do not forget my teaching, but let your heart keep my commandments. For the length of days and years, longer life. Let your heart keep my commandments for the length of days and years of life and peace they will add to you. The lesson is yours, and may happiness be yours as well. As we live in holiness, live by our conscience, and we use Jesus' instructions to create or increase our own happiness. That's our lesson. Thank you so much. If you have a spiritual need, we're here to help in any way that we can. Community, as the study said. Or your family, if you'd like to become a Christian, we can help you with that. Or other spiritual need, just let us know. Let's stand at this time, sing the song of invitation.